So this evening I'd like to clarify the misunderstanding of many lifetimes. Should take me about 10 or 15 minutes, I figure. This wonderful text from our teacher Hung Zhe, ancient 12th century Chinese teacher. And this is an excerpt from his the collection of his writings called Cultivating the Empty Field. And these are his practice instructions. So this is his advice to us. Emptiness is without characteristics. Illumination has no emotional afflictions. With piercing, quietly profound radiance, it mysteriously eliminates all disgrace. Thus one can know oneself, thus the self is completed. We all have the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. With boundless wisdom, journey beyond this, forgetting accomplishments. Straightforwardly abandon stratagems and take on responsibility. Having turned yourself around, accepting your situation, if you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. Contact phenomena with total sincerity. Not a single atom of dust outside yourself. So here we sit this evening in our warm and cozy zendo. Myself all layered up with shawls and hat and feeling quite safe and happy to be here. The wind howls outside and the banks of snow do not seem to be getting any smaller. Earlier in the week, Aaron asked if he could shovel out the brick walkway down to the gazebo. He got about 20 feet, and I thought, well, maybe somehow that path will mysteriously continue, but it hasn't. So we have a 20-foot path into the middle of the snow. If you're looking for how to get there, it's out the back door. Christine reported this morning that she saw a sign saying, snow for sale. how wonderful. We have an abundance of snow. No lack of any sort. And this is what Hung Zhe tells us. That we have an abundance of life. That this abundance of life is constantly manifesting. This illumination that is piercing quietly profound radiance. That mysteriously eliminates all disgrace. So this illumination he speaks of is a reference to what he called his style of Zen, the silent illumination. At the same time as Hung Zhe, there was another Zen master. Hung Zhe was in the Soto tradition. Another Zen master, Da Hui, in the Rinzai tradition. And Da Hui wrote quite a bit about how terrible silent illumination was, and how this was clearly the practice of inferior people. And the two of them had quite a go of it, although Dawi appears to be the one who did all the writing. And earlier this morning we were talking about Dharma combat, about as we come face to face with each other, as we come face to face with ourself. And on one hand, combat seems perhaps for many of us too aggressive an image. But yet there is something of extreme importance that we are doing here, that we are confronting. Combat conveys actually a kind of intimacy. I remember watching, I believe it was a James Bond movie, and James is in the back of a cargo plane fighting with the bad guy as the plane is going up and down in all kinds of directions, and it's quite suspenseful, and who will be thrown out and who won't be. And I realized as I watched it the incredible intimacy of these two actors, the incredible care they must have taken with each other to be able to enact this combat. Usually we say fighting is bad. But to engage wholeheartedly is required. Many years ago I studied and briefly taught Aikido, which is a martial art based on self-defense. And the wonderful thing about Aikido is that there are no attack moves. So you set up as you're practicing with the one person who attacks and the other person who does the Aikido. And the Aikido is to receive and blend with and use what is given. And from this perspective, the attack is simply energy coming our way. And as you get more skilled in Aikido, you have more and more fun with people attacking with more and more energy. So the dance is done, and the energy comes at us. And as we sit here, all kinds of energy comes at us. We encounter it. We move through the many states of being. And of course we are all coming and going. And the wonderful thing about this retreat over time is we get to track ourselves. We get to participate in the coming and going. So whether you are coming occasionally, coming every day, or here in residence at the temple, we get the opportunity to be with this coming and going, be with the many mind states that arise. And so we are invited to play hard. Our retreat structure, in fact, is a device, is a skillful means to up the ante. Sometimes I have clients that I work with in my life and leadership coaching business who get to very difficult places in their life where there seems to be no option. And I console them by saying, some people have to go on retreat to get this stuck. But look, you can do it in your daily life. And of course, it's not a question of whether we will get stuck. The Buddha said that the first truth of life is that we will all get stuck and we will not like it. So we are examining how to meet our life as it comes. How to play fully, because of course all of us want to live lives of meaning and engagement. We all long to live vividly and are all afraid on some level that we are not doing it right. That we are not doing our Zen right, or playing the role, or figuring out, or you name it. We have our own version of this. And so Hungjir talks about this illumination. Another word for illumination might be prajna, because as he talks about illumination, he talks about this piercing quality, this prajna, the wisdom that is not the wisdom of knowing things, but the wisdom of Manjushri, the wisdom, the sword of wisdom that cuts through our delusion. This wisdom, this illumination, is not the property of any person. It is not something you can acquire and hold on to. But it is an energy that you can join into, that you can align with this. And this energy of illumination, of piercing, of cutting through, is required in our practice. So here in Boundless Way, we work both with koans, and we work with the breath, and work with just sitting, shikantaza, just being, meeting our life here without meddling. On the surface, these practices seem quite different. But they are all manifestations of this immediacy of life and this fundamental turning that Hungjir talks about later in this piece, this turning of the heart. Hungjir was also an ancestor of Dogen, not directly, but like a great uncle. And in so much of Dogen's writings, we can see that he is working with these images of that Hungjir was working with. Of course, some Dogen scholars are quite down on Hungjir, that he was clearly mistaken and Dogen was clearly right. But so it goes, the constant judging and comparing that goes on. But in this excerpt, Hungjir says, having turned yourself around, having turned yourself around. And this turning is something that is required of us all. And I think the fundamental turning is the giving up looking for something outside of ourself. From the ordinary mind, it seems so clear that we just need something else in our life and we'll be fine. And we've been talking about this all week, about this sense that arises for us human beings, that the only problem with our life is the world. And if the world, if my partner, my boss, my job, was different, I would be fine. And so we try to get what we think we want. But all of us sitting in this room have been bitterly disappointed. All of us have not found what we are looking for in our heart of hearts. So part of taking up the path of Zen is giving up blaming, giving up looking outside ourself. And of course we continue, even as we sit, we continue this habit force, this, as he says, the misunderstanding of many lifetimes comes from the screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. I love that line, this scenario of isolation. We've been talking about this too, how the mind creates me and mine, and there are two kinds of things in the world. There is me and there is everything else. And from this little mind, we make up something we call enlightenment. And we think, if I had enlightenment, then I would be fine, happy, peaceful. But as we explore this I, we begin to see that it is quite difficult to find any substance in this. This scenario of isolation, so compelling and so powerful. I think it's important to honor the fierce power of the karma of our lives. The inertia of the way things are, this perspective of I am separate, I am here and the world is out there, is very difficult to see through. And Hungjar here is encouraging us to see through this ancient delusion that has caused us so much harm, that has brought us to our knees again and again, and encouraging us to turn around. To turn around the beam of our intention. He says, abandon stratagems and take responsibility. Abandon all your plans for awakening. And take responsibility to be here. This responsibility to be present to the suchness of our life. The possibility of stopping this ancient manipulation, trying to get more of this, less of that, and to accept our life. Having turned yourself around, accepting your situation. Once again, these familiar words of accepting what is here. The way through is here. Accepting your situation and this wonderful promise, this wonderful report from his experience, because I think when we encounter the writings of a genuine teacher, we can perhaps feel that this comes from his life, from his hours of Zazen, his weeks and decades, his life of practice. He says, having turned yourself around, accepting your situation, if you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. So our job is not to manufacture energy. Our job is not even to work hard. I love wholehearted so much more. So when we are tired and discouraged, we can wholeheartedly be tired and discouraged. When we are energetic and vibrant, we can wholeheartedly be energetic and vibrant. And Hongzhi's teaching, Hongzhi's promise to us is that as we turn to this moment and as we set foot on this path, that we will be guided, we will be supported. We will be met. And in this meeting, we find our true life, our true self complete, with nothing lacking, and we know this for ourselves. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably and we'll have our Dharma dialogue.
Which is, you interpreted that really challenging line about turning around, mm-hmm. partly as coming to terms with the fact that we're not going to find anything outside ourselves. Yeah. Right? We can stop. We can just stop that. And I get that, but at the same time, you know, when you said that, I was thinking that the bodhisattva path that we're on is also all about, you know, having teachers and teaching others and, you know, and not being able to do it on our own. And in fact, needing to look outside the self rather than, you know, sit on top of K2 in splendid isolation, enjoying our nirvana and coming, you know, staying on earth and getting back down to the flatlands and, you know, teaching mm-hmm. the Sangha. So yeah. I'm just wondering if I know it's not a contradiction, but I need you to explain to me why it's not.
Yeah, actually, Melissa.
I don't understand. I'm going to have to defer. Okay. I actually don't understand your question, well, but I know David does.
I do. I understand your question. I will illuminate you.
I think it must be very important.
All of these teachings are to awaken something in us. I think that's the most important thing I hear, that it looks like, well, am I supposed to listen to the teacher or am I supposed to follow myself? And we always encourage proclaim the paradox, don't believe us. Like, which is an action, how do you do that if you can't do that without believing? Don't take my word for it. So you have to take my word that you shouldn't take my word for it. But but this, the teaching is about you. And so all these teachings and all this coming up against each other is not so that we can learn what someone else knows. So we all are sitting on K2. right here in the afternoon in the Zendo, right? No one will save you. You maybe hope if you go see Melissa, she'll say something that will save you. But ultimately, whatever she says is only meaningful if it's yours. So I think that's this turning within. And when we turn within, what we encounter is all of the teachings that arise in the human heart. The teachings are actually not out there. These people that are teaching us and sharing with us are sharing about human life. And when we go in, it's not the solipsistic me as opposed to you that it appears. But I think when we truly go in, we say, oh my God, the bodhisattva vow arises naturally because it's so clear that we're not separate. So the paradox is only on that surface level. When we go in, we begin to see, oh, this me is just provisional, the you is provisional, and we can play with that and use that and have a wonderful time with that. But from that freedom of realizing that it's not what it appears to be.
So as you were saying that part in your talk about this turning around and how we create the self through running these scenarios of isolation, right? It occurred to me that perhaps a different terminology rather than stopping this, the running of these scenarios would be what Dogen says about greatly realizing delusion, that those who greatly realize this delusion are Buddhas.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So that maybe we could say that we don't even need to stop doing this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's enough just to see the fact that this is how we create the self.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's running these scenarios of isolation, right?
Yeah.
And really seeing that is enough rather than needing to stop it. So I took that as being the turning around there is seeing this process, and that's what turns us around.
Yeah, because I think to think we could stop it is reifying the self in a new way, right? But to see clearly, to see that this isn't, and it is not bad. I mean, that's the great news, that it's not like we're bad and have to stop doing it. Human beings cannot stop creating selves. Right? We cannot stop delusion. Delusion fighters, but we can see through it and be free. Yeah, yeah, well said, thank you.
So can I ask the question that I had about that process? So you can clarify this one. So it's this beginning part, and I have this trouble with other Hanja pieces where he says emptiness has no characteristics, right? And illumination has no
afflictions.
And so what comes up for me is that it seems that this is like describing another place or mental state where, there's just complete emptiness with no characteristics. There's this bright illumination and there's no emotion. And when I picked this out to do this morning because, it really kind of hooked me, and what came up for me is this, are we talking about the same emptiness here as like in the Heart Sutra where we say, emptiness is exactly form and form is exactly emptiness? Are we separating out this, this emptiness piece and saying, well, this is different than the universe? Because it seems where does my emotional affliction fit in if there isn't any in illumination? And if emptiness has no characteristics, then, does this have no characteristics?
Yeah.
you know, the all this talk is so interesting. I feel like I'm riding on the waves of this struggle that we're all having, trying to understand Hongzhi's mind, because he's in translation too by Dan Leighton. He's being he sounds very absolutist, and we're just interpreting him, you know, from our own awakened nature that's seeing something here. And so it's important not to get too caught by words and concepts, you know, that. But I think the fundamental truth underlying Hongzhi's words, however they're translated and heard, is that he knows something about the feeling of that illumination that you
right.
know too.
Right.
And it's the same knowing. And everybody in this room, even though the words might be like, this may sound like a really abstract conversation to many of us, like, what?
Right.
What? There's different kinds of emptiness now? What are we talking about? What's going on? But there's something that happens in Zen practice, and teachers help students see this, because it's really hard to see. You need this mirrored back, that there is no lasting substantive self. It really is a delusion. And if we divide the mind at that point and say, so that's great, so it's a delusion, now I'm going to get rid of all my delusions, that's what you're pointing out, that's not honoring the fact that of this wholeness that we've been talking about. So delusion is also part of this. Emptiness is a terrible word for it, let's face it. It's part of shunyata. It's part of the whole thing. It's part of reality. Lately I've been using the word reality to talk about it. So reality includes that stick that you picked up. But if you really look at it deeply, where's this stick? You know, if you look at it with a photon microscope, it's just a bunch of stuff moving around, temporarily taking the form of stick.
Right.
And you're temporarily taking the form of Steve, and I'm taking the form of Melissa. And so you can approach that intellectually, and then it becomes reified and stuck and dead. We're talking about this aliveness, you know, on the level of the microscopic level. It's just constant shifting and changing, and human beings love to solidify things. And so Hongzhi is talking about if you stop that process of, if you see through the process of solidification, which gives you the biggest delusion of all, isolation, then you become liberated, free. And many of us in this room, I bet everybody has had a moment like that. But the problem is that the human mind jumps on those moments and solidifies, turns them into sticks again. You know, I had a moment of awakening, man, I'm so cool. And then it's lost. The other thing too, I think I loved the you know, this argument between Dawi and Hongzhi. Historically, they were friends. And I think you were putting it out in terms of the energy that they had for each other. They really respected each other. All the evidence points to deep respect. But they used different concepts to talk about the same thing. So Dawi was in love with his concepts, and Hongzhi was in love with his concept. And you're in love with yours, and Alan's in love with his, and I'm in love with mine. This is so you can feel how slippery it all is.
Right.
To talk about it at all almost does it a disservice. But we have to. We have to. Otherwise, we'll just be lost in our delusions. And to illustrate, David has a quote from Dawi.
From Dawi. So I think we're in the realm of the inconceivable here, mm-hmm. right? Which we're always sort of dancing on this edge. And this is, I've been also studying some letters by Dawi. And he says, once this Dharma is clear, then this very clarity is the state of inconceivable great liberation. This state itself is impossible to conceive. Since the state is inconceivable, all similes are also inconceivable, and all kinds of things are also inconceivable. And this inconceivability itself is also inconceivable. These words, too, are inapplicable, and this inapplicability is also inconceivable. So I thought that sort of...
That's it. Well, and you can see where we spend most of our time sitting in silence.
But I really appreciate you noticing getting hooked on these words. And again, there's some way we have to understand these words in terms of our experience. Because it seems like, and Hongzhi, you know, so emptiness is without characteristic, illumination has no emotional afflictions. Do I want to be part of it? Because it sounds dead and dry. But I think he's talking about this inconceivable. So any characteristic we say, any description would be limiting life or you know, the aliveness or emptiness, or the Dharmakaya. So it's beyond any conception. And I think it's that field. Jeff said the beautiful phrase in our morning dialogue that joy is the vibration of the universe. So maybe instead of emptiness, we could say joy is without characteristic. You know, manifesting as that stick, manifesting as whatever. So, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Nat.
You mentioned in your talk the feeling of if only something were different in the world, and you know, facing the delusion that you know if the job were different, or this situation were different, or that were different, and I find that most of my suffering comes from if something were different. Mm-hmm. Inside, something in my. I feel right now like I'm the bodhisattva of the five hindrances, and I am trying very hard to follow your advice not to solidify that.
Yeah.
To also notice that I gave to a vocal lesson or a piano lesson today where I was fully present fully involved. And I lifted three very, very heavy objects up four flights of stairs to my, apartment so they wouldn't freeze in my car. And that's all I did today. And so to be able to experience sloth and torpor and to experience worry and restlessness and to say... and to experience the feeling in the pit of my stomach and say, that's okay, that's not bad, or to not add fear to that, I don't know how to do that. I just don't know how to do it. And so I do it. And it's inconceivable.
And the key, Nat, lies in saying, I don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Because the little self, actually can't do it.
Yeah.
There is no doing there. There's meeting. We can set up conditions to meet these things. But we're not in charge. You know, it'd be like saying, I'm going to circulate my blood now. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna do my liver functions. I got a long list.
We're gonna get my kidneys. Gotta digest the food. Move it from
my heart. And then really, it's just endless. We do so little. We have so little power and so little choice. The little bit of choice we have is to do just what you're saying, to see it, and also see how all of these things, every story we tell about ourselves, is a limiting mental construction.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable. And that's all you can... So there's a lot of surrender in this.
Right? And yet there's some joy in saying, I came here tonight.
There's a lot of joy. It's all joy.
Yeah. I came here tonight. It imputes something.
Yeah. Here you are. The wind is howling outside. And here you are.
I got in my car.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think... in the true Zen life, it's just one step. You know, that is, so the demonstration of your great heart, your great love, is here you are. Mm. Right? And what a thing that all of us, that any of us are here. Like, it's amazing.
How did this happen? We're all photons. And you know, this is, it's very tricky here because there's the delusion of the self making a self, the will, you know, to get here. There's so many causes and conditions that got you to get into that car.
Yes.
It's like circulating your blood again. And we sort of have to bow to the, you know, David, I think I heard this from you first, or maybe you heard it from me, this old Ojibwe Indian saying, why do I go about pitying myself when all the time I'm being carried on great winds across the sky? You know, this is like, just surrender already. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all the self can do, is surrender to circumstances and then pick it up and say, I'm going to go with this. And to really be suspicious about that, the phrasing of that sentence, I am going to. Mm-hmm. Who's driving the car? Who's bowing? Who's lifting heavy objects? I don't know who it is. It's a great mystery. And I think this is what Hongzhi is also pointing to when he's talking at the beginning. It has the illumination that's not fixated on me and I and mine. It has no emotional afflictions. There's nowhere for them to stick. We have to make an I to have emotional afflictions. And we do it pretty much every moment of every day. Just to see through it is so liberating. Yeah.
Thank you.
And the line about accept your situation, I think mm-hmm. that's what it says. Mm-hmm. And then, so this is this what you've been talking about, this surrender, this bowing, accepting, you know, we are story-creating machines.
Right.
And then what follows from it, right, is that blessings or help, right, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you accept. Once we accept.
Right.
Yeah, then the winds, you know, I mean, the winds are carrying us anyway, but maybe.
Well, but we can know it. Yeah, we can receive and appreciate.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But this idea that spiritual energy will marvelously transport you.
That's
what I pray for every afternoon. But it does come, right? Yeah.
So it's like this precedent, which is accept your situation.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. The cost of entry is, this.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a way to be on the top of K2 and not be isolated if we have that attitude. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the beautiful thing about this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he ends by saying contact phenomena with total sincerity. You know, if your butt is on the mountain, where's the difference between you and the mountain? And then he says, not a single atom of dust outside yourself. It's another pointing to the same teaching that we've been encountering at every Dharma talk. Mm-hmm. This wholeness, that if we cut off any part of it, that's delusion, because you can't cut off part of the whole. It's just present. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.